The Irish Times, election 2011.
Hello, I'm Hugh Linehan. You're listening to the Irish Times, election 2011. Later on, we'll be hearing why political reform will continue to be a major issue well after this election is over. Mary Minahan will be looking at the battle in Dublin Midwest. But first, Harry McGee shares his thoughts on election 2011, the highs, the lows, and the winners and the losers.
Well, we're within 24 hours of the vote taking place. My own impression is that right from the start, it was a foregone conclusion. Everybody knew that Fianna Fáil were going into opposition. The big question in this election is who would become Taoiseach and who would lead the coalition. And indeed, a third question began to emerge a week into the election campaign. Would there be a coalition, or for the first time since 1977, would we have a single party government running with an overall Dáil majority? And what seemed inconceivable a year ago, impossible 5 years ago, may become a reality tomorrow. We may see Fine Gael getting an overall majority. So in that respect, it's been an extraordinary campaign. In terms of momentum and in terms of tempo, it hasn't been the most energetic campaign of all time. My own opinion is the reason for that is that it has been so frenetic, it has been so fluid, it has been so volatile over the past 2 years that the election, which came at the end of the process, almost came as a relief. And all of the parties have known there would be an early election, and some of them have been preparing it for an awful long time. I did a piece on strategy this morning, looking at the strategists behind the main parties. The Fine Gael strategists were telling me that they have been preparing for this for over 2 years. In November 2009, when the Greens wobbled a little over the question of NAMA, they did a dry run of the campaign. They had a whole 25-day campaign made out back then with events for every day. They had the leaders' tour in place. They had the logistics of the campaign organised. They had also their election slogan and the thrust of their election campaign organised an awful long time ago. In 2007, the slogan they had was Contract for a Better Ireland, and they also used colour-coded posters. Both of those were successful gambits, not successful enough indeed to get Fine Gael into government, but when they polled people afterwards, there were the two things that people remembered: the contract and also the fact that they used colour-coded posters. So when we look at the Fine Gael campaign, they have a very simple slogan, the five-point plan, which they have battered to death and relentlessly throughout the course of the campaign. Every time you open a newspaper, you're afraid that Enda Kenny is going to spring out at you with his five-point plan. And each of the 5 points in the plan has had its own colour coding. In a way, it kind of sounds really simple and a little bit cynical, but it works, and it has worked for them. They have a simple message that they have been flogging unmercilessly, and it has worked for them. For the other parties, there have been very mixed campaigns. Fianna Fáil and the Greens went into the election in the worst possible circumstances. If you go back a year or 18 months, what they were hoping is that they'd get all the hard stuff done. They got the really austere budgets, the very difficult pieces of legislation through the Dáil, and then hope that there would be an upside at the far end of it, that there would be an upswing in the economy, that people would go back into jobs, that exports would grow, that we'd experience a little bit of growth here in Ireland. But they never got a chance to do that. And they went into the election at the worst possible moment. There was the IMF and EU intervention. We'd lost our sovereignty. They passed an extraordinarily severe budget in which 6 billion was taken out of the economy. And then just as the election was being announced, Fianna Fáil imploded. The leader stood his ground. He survived. And a couple of days later, he shot himself. They had a new leader who wasn't even Taoiseach leading them into the campaign. And then just as the campaign started, people got their paychecks and they looked at the paycheck and they saw the effects of the extra taxes, of the new and despised universal social charge, and there was an awful lot of anger out there. So for Fianna Fáil, this election has been a salvage operation. The people are vengeful. They want to blame somebody for all the woes of the past 2 years, and Fianna Fáil, and to a lesser extent as accessories after the fact, the Greens are both taking all the flack in relation to that. I think Fianna Fáil are going to have a savage election. I don't quite think it's going to be 20 seats. I think they might survive in the mid-20s. That's just a hunch I have at the moment, that there are core voters that will go back to them, but it's a big fall from grace. I would be very surprised if the Greens have more than 2 TDs, and they may even have none after this election. Fine Gael, as I said, it's a simple message. They have had a hurricane behind them. For Labour, unfortunately, the Gilmore Gale has been a slightly more unfortunate wind. It's been an ill wind rather than a good wind for the party. I think the party made a strategic mistake last November in becoming overconfident when seeing the polls they had. The Gilmore for Taoiseach strategy didn't really work. And the problem for the party was that they didn't change it when the wind started blowing in the other direction, and they didn't start coming out with realistic messages. I said that the voters were vengeful. I think the voters are also slightly masochistic as well, in that they want parties to tell them the naked truth, the stark truth, and not to make promises that can't be fulfilled. And I think Labour weren't in a position to do that. I think they had positioned themselves wrongly at the start of the campaign by pushing Eamon Gilmore forward rather than pushing the party and its messages forward. And I think that the message it was sending out didn't strike a chord with the electorate. And then they changed tack halfway through the election with attack ads on Fine Gael. And I think that really suited them a little bit more, but perhaps it came a little late in the campaign. But there's no hope that Labour will be the biggest party. They will make gains, but the gains won't be as spectacular as everybody was predicting last autumn. I suppose the most surprising thing has been the transformation of Enda Kenny. Enda Kenny was Fine Gael's biggest liability going into the election campaign. I'm not for a moment suggesting that he has now become its biggest asset, but his stock has risen incredibly amongst the public, and he did much better than was anticipated during the campaign and also in the leaders' debate. He's not a good debater. I think he lost all debates he was in, but at least he didn't make any fundamental errors. And being a good Taoiseach is not necessarily the same as being a good debater. Brian Cowan was a very good debater, for example, and the jury is definitely out as to whether he was a good Taoiseach or not. I like the campaigns of some of the more unusual candidates. I like the campaign of Ming the Merciless, Luke Flanagan in Roscommon, who I think is going to win a seat. We saw the entry of a couple of other colourful characters like Mick Wallace in Wexford, who is a very high profile, and I think high profile, as has been shown before, may get people elected, and I think that Mick Wallace may get in. There have been a few other candidates who have been refreshing. Dylan Haskins had a very good YouTube, amazing piece of art as a campaign slogan. His policies were a little bit superficial. You're kind of wading through the shallows looking at his policies. But he was young. He brought a kind of a bit of verve. He brought a new dimension to it. And I think the independent candidates like him are a good thing for democracy. I don't really think he has a hope of getting elected, but at least he will be laying down a mark for the future. I think Micheál Martin, I like my politics to be rough and tumble. I've always been a huge admirer of Paul Keating, the former Prime Minister of Australia, who was very aggressive. In Ireland, some people don't like politicians being aggressive. I must say I like Micheál Martin's aggression, maybe perhaps because I'm kind of slightly aggressive as myself. It did a lot for me. I think he did had a very good campaign in the circumstances. And in the Labour Party, I thought Eamon Gilmore had huge difficulty in finding the right emotional pitch. He didn't want to be Mr. Angry, Mr. Irritable. He wanted to be more statesmanlike. It took him a long time to find his mojo in that regard. And I think he only found it towards the end of the campaign, during the course of the TG Cahir debate and also during the last three-person debate. And just finally, because I am a Gaelgor, I was delighted to see all three leaders speaking for an hour and debating for an hour in Irish. It's the first time it's ever happened. I don't think it's going to happen again. As Tomás Griffin said a long time ago, Ní eacimid a leithéid arís.
The Irish Times, Election 2011, Constituency Profiles. Mary Minahan, Dublin Midwest.
Taking a look at the Dublin Midwest constituency, it's a four-seat constituency. The outgoing TDs here are John Curran of Fianna Fáil, Joanna Tuffey of Labour, Paul Gogarty, the Green Party TD, and of course the outgoing deputy, Mary Harney, who was the leader of the Progressive Democrats at one stage and the former Minister of Health, recently served as an independent Minister of Health. To make a very blunt verdict, I think what we might end up with in Dublin Midwest is one Fianna Fáil seat, two Fine Gael seats and one Labour Party seat. To break that down a little bit more, there's a potential electorate, I should say, there of more than 60,000. Both Fine Gael and Labour guaranteed a seat in Dublin Midwest. That's the only thing I suppose you can say with any real degree of certainty. What local observers are telling me is that either the Labour TD, Joanna Tuffey, or Fine Gael's Shannon leader, Frances Fitzgerald, are going to top the poll there. A few people would give it for Fitzgerald. She's very close to her Fine Gael leader, Enda Kenny, so she could very much expect a cabinet position in a new administration. Tuffey, likewise, has performed well since she was elected in 2007. She does have the advantage of being an incumbent. I would say, however, that both those women have very well-known running mates. It's not easy to say which party then of Fine Gael and Labour would shade a second seat at the moment, I'd give it for Fine Gael. Just the way the polls are going, the polls aren't quite favouring Labour as much as they'd like. So I would give the second seat to Fine Gael, but it's not a racing certainty either. I know the candidates from the so-called establishment parties are feeling a little bit edgy about where a very palpable, angry protest vote will go. They're just not too sure about that, really. Paul Gogarty, the Green TD, would have benefited from that in the past. I think it's going to be quite unlikely that Mr. Gogarty will retain his seat unless he can tap in to previously undiscovered pockets of support. I know one thing he's using on his canvas is that the Green leader, John Gormley, has performed quite well in recent weeks. He's saying he's getting a lot of good feedback about that. But I think in this four-seater, he'd be really lucky to return to the Dáil. Another interesting thing to look at is where Mary Harney's vote will go. Local observers tell me they believe it'll be distributed among the Fine Gaelers, and that's where I come up with the tentative verdict that Fine Gael are probably going to achieve two seats there. I should also name the running mates, Fine Gael and Labour woman. They are Derek Keating for Fine Gael and Robert Dowds for Labour. I would say also the Sinn Féin candidate could be in the running for the final seat. It's Owen O'Brien. He ran in Dunleary in 2007. He's conducted an energetic campaign. He's clearly a strategic thinker. I think he will pull quite well here, benefiting from that so-called protest vote. He'll feature strongly enough, really, to feature in the battle then for the fourth and final vote. There's a strange situation here that you've got two candidates running under the ULA, the United Left Alliance banner. I think the People Before Profits, Gino Kenny, is probably the best known of those names, really, and he will get a decent vote. I don't think he's anywhere within shout of a seat, but it will be interesting to see where his votes transfer to.
The Irish Times, election 2011.
I certainly can't recall an election in my lifetime in which there was so much talk of political reform and so many promises on the table from the different political parties. I also detect a fair old note of cynicism out there about what might actually be achieved by the next government or in the next Dáil. So a difference perhaps between perception or sales pitch and reality. And I'm joined in studio by two gentlemen, Joe Curtin and Johnny Ryan of reformcard.com. Essentially, I suppose, Johnny, you're trying to keep track of what those promises are and perhaps even more importantly, which of them might end up getting delivered.
This is a very simple idea. We're used to rating things in life. If someone wants to buy a book, it probably has a 5-star review on Amazon. If someone wants to buy a fridge, it probably has an A+ energy rating badge on it. So the way this idea came to life was that my colleague sitting across from us here, Joseph Curtin, does work for the OECD. And what he does is he goes to other countries and he looks at what they're doing to meet their climate change goals across their entire economies. Obviously, he has to develop metrics for that. And he walked into my office one day, just before Christmas, and he said, Johnny, I think we should do this and bring some sort of empirical measurement to political reform promises, because what we have is a singular moment of opportunity. My own background is that I'm a digital researcher and author of a book, A History of the Internet and the Digital Future. And so I've looked at how, especially in the US, politics has moved from beyond using the internet as a digital soapbox to using it as a platform for measuring delivery increasingly. So together, we're working on stages 1 and 2 of this project. We're looking at rating the reform and then measuring
delivery. In relation to the work you're talking about climate change, that can be measured in terms of both scientifically and economically in terms of certain measures that are brought in. Economic strategy, I think you can see how that'll be measured. There are numbers involved. There are economic reports and indicators. Political reform, is that not something that's much more in the eye of the beholder with different views about what's the best route to take? How do you measure that in the same way?
What captured my imagination about this was I knew from being in college 15 years ago in Trinity College Dublin when I was studying political science, I knew that there was a fair degree of consensus about what needed to be done to fix our broken political system. Just back then there was no appetite to do it. And so we took political reform per se and we said, well, how do we systemise political reform into something that can be measured? So we worked with the academic panel on developing a methodology and we came up with 5 priority areas for reform.
And what we have is really the best political science talent from Ireland. So there are 8 academics and they are tapping in turn into best international practice. So whenever they are challenged on anything, they say, look, the following study has been done and is the best answer we have for whatever the question that has been asked. And that's a lot better than a hunch by a politician with a hobby horse.
What are the key areas you're looking at?
We have a Oireachtas reform, so it's reform of the Dáil to try and make it work properly. It doesn't work properly at the moment. The biggest problem is that the opposition doesn't have any power and the executive is completely dominant and it's more or less a rubber stamp institution.
Isn't that a phenomenon which is not peculiar just to Ireland? I mean, you see complaints, for example, about the parliamentary system in the UK not functioning as it should and becoming more presidential and less parliamentary.
Yeah.
So is that perhaps a function of changes in Western democracy and Western society more broadly than just being peculiar to Ireland?
Well, according to our experts, we have the most executively dominated political system in Europe. The UK is another example of a very executively dominated system. But if the European norm, no, that's not the case.
Oh,
and
right.
Take things like a committee system, take things like proper debate of legislation before it takes shape. You know, that's when you can really influence legislation. But what happens here is that legislation gets more or less decided in cabinet and it just goes straight to the Dáil, rubber stamp, guillotine of legislation, no proper debate.
Could I jump in there as well? I mean, one of the reasons why everything that Joe's just described are so important is that this is about institutional reform. We've received a little bit of criticism. Why haven't you covered this or that, for example? Why aren't you dealing explicitly with economic policy? The idea is that you should not waste a crisis. We have a consensus about that across this country. What is one of the most difficult things to reform? The entire apparatus and institutions of how governance decisions are made. And that's what this project is about.
Johnny and I feel like, you know, we've had a lot of opportunity. We've been given a lot of opportunity by this country. And we wanted to sort of, what can we do to try and ensure that we're not back here again in 30 years? If we have kids, that they're not back here trying to solve these problems again. You know, the greatest minds in the country are trying to figure out the economic, you know, crisis. Best to look to them. We are not going to try and add to that debate.
There are some policies on the table, I know, and we might touch on those, but from some of the political parties in relation to reform of the committee system, longer sitting, more accountability generally, and more efficient and transparent system.
Empowerment of the opposition, for example, to give them more resources, that kind of thing. Getting rid of guillotine, giving the Oireachtas committees, reversing Abbey Lara, those kind of things are the things that are on the table. Oireachtas reform, electoral reform, which is quite controversial, and a lot of we received a little bit of criticism for our treatment of that area.
Why so?
We decided to be agnostic towards reform of the electoral system. The academic panel decided to be agnostic. So they said that because there is no consensus in the literature, and in fact any degree of consensus suggests that our electoral system is not the problem, the panel, I think they're consensus view is we need to fix PRSDV, not kind of throw it out. The received wisdom in society and in the political debate and to a certain degree among political parties is that the electoral system is responsible for cronyism. But the panel took the view that if you fix the other parts of the system and the system works together as a whole, that these issues would be addressed anyway in the PRSDV. So it's a sort of a cause and effect thing. What is the cause? And there's a fair degree of consensus in the academic panel that in fact the electoral system is not the cause.
And the other areas then?
So open government, which covers things like restoration of freedom of information, publishing government data online, whistleblower legislation, those kind of areas. Public sector reform, so we're not getting into, again, the economic side of it. We're not getting into whether we need to downsize or upsize or whether we need to increase or decrease public servants' wages. What we're talking about is things like increasing accountability in the public service.
And so making it more efficient and more accountable, essentially.
And the last one would be local government reform. So we have a very incredibly fragmented, poorly funded and dysfunctional public or local government system, which a lot of people consider to be actually at the root of a lot of our problems. One of the areas, for example, we're measuring under local government is citizen participation. That's another thing that we don't have. So not only do the constituent parts of the system not have much power, but the actual people have very little power to influence legislation. And so we've considered this under two areas. So electoral reform, one of the areas that we were measuring was the extent to which political parties were willing to allow people to have a role, maybe in the form of a citizens' assembly, in reforming the system.
So that's a kind of fifth channel, is the process of actually implementing a reform itself, whether it's top-down or bottom-up.
Fit neatly into any particular area, but we put it under electoral reform to find a home for it. Each of these five areas is measured with five indicators. So we have five broad areas, five indicators. That's one of our indicators, so it's 1/25th of the scoring system, if you like. And then under local government, we also had empowering people in whatever form. We're agnostic towards how a political party will try and address that issue. It's funny that, you know, the major parties weren't really that into looking at that kind of area.
Why do you think that is?
I think in terms of local government, what we're talking about are things that are very unpopular. So, for example, moving towards more regional governance and away from this fragmented local government. But you know what happens when you want to regionalise anything in Ireland? Look what's happened in the health service. I don't need to spell it out. Mm-hmm. Extremely unpopular politically. Second thing is, another thing we're talking about is proper funding of local government. What does that mean?
How are the parties doing? by your measure.
Joe has the scores. So
I've got scores in front of me. So
if I had a drum roll, I would do it.
Yes. So we finally got around to the actual scoring. So these are the results of the Irish Academic Panel. So Fine Gael came out on top. They scored 74 out of 100. So one of the lines I heard used by our academic panel explaining this was that, you know, well, they're strong across all areas except for local government, but they've been developing their policy. They've had the chance to develop their policy for a period of 2 years, really, and they really have run this election very much on a policy platform. And Labour, I mean, Labour came second. They scored 68. The Greens, originally we scored the manifestos, but they published a supplementary policy document, so their score moved to 68 as well. So they were more or less the same score as Labour in the end. Fianna Fáil were 58, and the areas that they fell down on particularly were local government, where they more or less had no proposals whatsoever in the local government area, but they actually did very strongly in a lot of other areas. For example, Oireachtas reform, they had a lot of proposals to reform the functioning of the Dáil and to improve its functioning. For example, one of the things to address the kind of cabinet dominance issue was to bring in external expertise, which was considered by our academic panel to be quite a novel suggestion. And
if only they'd been in power for the last 15 years, we might have seen some of your proposals implemented already.
I know, it would have been fantastic.
You would have to make the point, and I'm sure you have taken it on board, that there have been plenty of proposals for political reform put forward by various political parties over the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And to be honest, we've seen damn all concrete results.
There are two responses to that, which I'll give in a sec, but you've one party left.
Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin was 53, and then I think Johnny is in a good position to... We're going to try and address that.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that each of those 125 indicators is scored between 0 and 4. And for it to get a 4, it has to be in the manifesto. The reason for that is that the academic panel assured us at the outset that things that are in the manifesto are proven internationally to end up in the programme for government. So while there may have been certain commitments, in inverted commas, to reform in the past, what we're now seeing is that the parties who are scoring highest have made commitments in a document that you can beat them over the head with after the election. The second thing is that as stage one of this project ends, and it'll end with our scoring of the programme for government once it's released, stage two will be beginning. And stage two will leverage what has started to happen in the last few weeks. We've started to see that reformcard.com has attracted a community of people who are volunteering their time pro bono. Not only are we not making any cash out of this, or the academic panel, but there are people we have never met, web developers, data visualizers, policy researchers, and they are doing stuff for us that we have not even asked them to do. They've just suddenly appeared. We've put a few requests into a few forums, and they're building tools for us. Some of the tools that are currently being built are measures of tracking, constitutional change, citizens' initiatives, and legislation, so that literally the idea is there'll literally be a straight line and you can see how different strands of policy is progressing along that line. And if there's a problem with the progression and with the delivery of the promised reform commitment, that line will show a big break and then people will start to discuss and reach for the data to show why that break has happened. So what will happen in stage two, what's beginning to happen, is that volunteers are engaging in public scrutiny of the next government's commitments to delivering on reform. That's an interesting thing to happen in Irish politics.
But what you can do is you can go onto our website, reformcard.com.
A volunteer called Paul Dixon, out of the blue, literally, built a tool for us where you can click on the different parties and drill down into each score and find out exactly what in the manifesto
is. And there'll be an expert comment from our academic panel in each area.
We'll have to leave it there, but I think I'd reiterate the point that it's like a puppy. It's not just for Christmas. This process is going to continue on after the election.
And that's how we're looking for volunteers.
Stuff. And people can go to reformcard.com if they want to find out more. Thanks very much to Joe Curtin and Johnny Ryan for joining us. That's it for today from the Election 2011 podcast. Remember, you can follow us on irishtimes.com/election2011. Follow us on Twitter as well @ITElection, or indeed you can even email us at election@irishtimes.com.